Finnamore souvenir programme.
Can it be? Can it really be? Excuse me, sir. What year is this?
1896.
It works! It works! My God, it actually works! Sir, do not be afraid.
All right.
But you see this? It's a...
time machine?
Yes. How did you know?
Well, you appeared out of nowhere, asked me what year it was, and seemed delighted with the answer. It was fairly self-explanatory. Still, well done for building one. What's it made of?
I'm afraid the technology is so far in advance of yours, and I couldn't...
No, I meant to this, the casing. Well, what's that?
Well, as it happens, I've made it out of an old horse box.
A horse box?
Yes.
Whatever is that?
Well, it's just a box you can put a horse in.
A box? Into which you can place a horse? To think that I should live to see such a thing.
Yeah, it used to be a horse box. Now, it's a time machine. I mean, I have actually broken free of time itself.
Yes, yes, as in Mr. Wells' recent novel, I understand. But a box for horses!
It's really not that remarkable.
And what is its purpose?
To travel in time!
No, the horse box. Once you have placed the horse within the box, what then?
But then you can take it places.
But surely the horse takes you places.
Well, yes, but for longer distances than a horse can manage.
So if it's too far for the horse to carry you, you carry the horse.
Yes.
In a box.
Yes, you tow it behind a car.
Car?
Oh, a horse's carriage.
Not entirely horseless, by the sound of it.
Look, you're missing the point here. The horse box isn't the amazing invention here. The time machine is.
Well, yes, except presumably it won't work when you try to go back.
Well, why shouldn't it?
Well, if it did work, there'd be time machines everywhere. And yours is the first one I've seen. But a horse box! Wait here! I'm going to go and get my horse!
Famous anecdotes the way they really happened. Arthur Rubinstein.
Excuse me!
Yes?
Oh, can you tell me the way to Carnegie Hall?
Practice.
What?
You want to play at Carnegie Hall, my boy? You gotta practice.
Play there? I don't want to play there. I want to go there. I'm meeting my girlfriend outside it.
Oh, yep, sure. It's three blocks down. And...
why would you assume I want to play there?
Oh, well, you know, I am Arthur Rubinstein, the great maestro.
Oh, the great maestro. Oh, forgive me, the great maestro, for asking you directions.
I thought you'd think it was funny. I...
Bullshit! You just wanted to show off. Oh, and by the way, I didn't say how do I get to Carnegie Hall. I said, can you tell me the way there?
Yeah, well, the way to get to play there is to practice.
Goodbye!
Goodbye.
Okay, kids, in the car, please.
Bagsy, the front seat!
Shotgun!
Oh,
okay,
hey,
Harry gets the front seat.
That's not fair, I said Bagsy first!
Did you? Okay, Anne gets the front seat.
Oh, but Dad, she didn't finish saying it. I said shotgun before she finished.
That is true, Anne.
But you only said it because you heard me saying
it. All right, that's enough. Harry gets the front seat, that's final.
Yes!
No, that's not fair, I'm taking this to Mum.
Well, that is, of course, you're right.
All right, one at a time. So, Anne, you Bagsied it.
Yes, she hadn't. She was still saying it.
I see, and then you Bagsied it quicker.
I said shotgun.
What? No, this is a Bagsy house. Shotgun has no force of law here.
It does, everyone knows shotgun.
I don't think so. Anne gets the front seat.
No! I want an appeal.
Well, you have that option, of course, but are you sure it's necessary?
Yes, I appeal.
Very well. Tell your dad to go and fetch them.
Having weighed the evidence carefully, I regret to announce the council of the grandparents are forced to return a split judgment. Granny and Grandpa fine for the Bagsy, Granddad and Nana for the shotgun.
Do you need more time to deliberate?
I fear that would be of no real use. The grandparents are all firmly entrenched in their positions.
Never even heard of shotgun.
Right, then we'll just have to go to full session.
Silence, please. I declare this full session of the Harrison Family Court open. Great Aunt Emily presiding.
Your Auntship, I am Cousin Daniel. I will be appearing for the Bagsy. We shall clearly show Anne was not only the first to speak, she also finished speaking the word Bagsy before Harry began the word shotgun, and the front seat is therefore hers.
I am sister-in-law Sandra for the shotgun, and we will conclusively demonstrate that to Bagsy is a transitive verb and thus meaningless until an object is specified. Whereas shotgun is widely understood to embody the phrase, I Bagsy the front seat. Therefore, Harry's claim was completed first and the seat is his.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sorry, but this is another of the petty claims that are clogging up the system and I take a very dim view of it. You realise I have the whole of Who Said What to Who at Dennis's Funeral to get through this session.
With respect, Your Auntship, I think when you hear the evidence, you'll find this is an unusual case.
No, I think not. I'm invoking eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Objection of your auntship, with the greatest of respect. EMMM has been comprehensively discredited as an impartial system.
Objection overruled. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Catch
objection
by his toe. If he wriggles, let him go. Eeny, meeny, miny. Mo.
Yes!
The court finds for the shotgun. Harry will ride in the front seat. The court would also like to append some remarks. Anne has grown remarkably, and Harry is the living image of his granddad at that age. Court dismiss!
Often called the king of stand-up, Joe Holland is, for my money, the funniest man in Britain. So I'm surprised on arriving at his house at how normal it is. Just a house with doors and windows like any other house. It's not bright pink or inflatable. There's basically nothing that gives it away as the house of a comic genius. And when the man himself answers the doorbell, which has a normal chime, not a funny one, I'm in for a further shock. He's normally dressed in trousers and a shirt like a normal person would wear, in normal colours like blue. What's with this compulsive need to hide his comic identity? I resolve to find out. He speaks.
Hi, I'm Joe.
He says in a normal voice.
Did you have much trouble finding the place?
This, quite frankly, I don't get at all. I wait for the devastating payoff.
Only some people have trouble finding the turning.
Is that it? Some people have trouble finding the turning. If that's supposed to be a joke, it's far from his usual standard. Funniest man in Britain. Suddenly, I'm not so sure.
Anyway, come inside.
He says, normally and unfunnily. I can't believe the change in the man. When I've seen him before, on stage or on television, everything he says is carefully designed to be really funny. But off stage, he seems entirely humourless.
Horrible weather, isn't it?
He says, and then I realise the truth of the situation. Joe Holland, the man of a thousand gags, is a certifiable depressive. Endlessly trying to fill up the emptiness of his soul with the laughter of strangers, whilst offstage he wrestles with his personal black dog, the horrible, horrible weather.
But they say it's going to brighten up tomorrow.
Oh, manic depressive. A little scared, I try to keep up with the rollercoaster of his moods, as now, on the upswing of his mania, he babbles about the coming brightness he's been promised by some power he refers to only as they.
Still, nice weather for ducks.
I back away a little scared. His fragile grip on reality has clearly broken down altogether, and some weird duck fixation is bubbling up to the surface. He must see the fear written in my face, for he adds...
Only joking.
And I realise he simply can't turn it off. A relentless gag machine, unable to engage with anyone without firing duck jokes at them. A tragic figure who substitutes constant, compulsive wisecracking for any genuine human contact.
Are you all right?
Probably bullied at school. Or the class clown. Or both, but not neither.
Only, you haven't said anything since you got here.
It's pathetic, really. The hunger for approval from his audience, whether it be the Hammersmith Apollo or a prize-nominated feature journalist. There's clearly nothing I could say that would satisfy his desperate need for validation, so I don't even try. I bestow a sad smile on this damaged husk of a human and depart, leaving my photographer to get a picture of him standing in his garden pond holding a rubber chicken. Joe Holland, portrait of a psycho clown.
Famous anecdotes, the way they really happened. Winston Churchill.
Mr. Churchill, you are drunk.
Yes, madam. I am drunk. But in the morning, I will be hungover. And you will... Oh, wait, I forgot to say you're ugly.
Mr. Churchill!
No, no, it's all right. It's for a thing. You're ugly, you see. And I am drunk. And also ugly. And in the morning, I will still be ugly and a little bit drunk. But you will no longer wither. Would you like a drink?
No.
You're lovely.
Goodbye.
This train is now approaching Mitchell Dava. Mitchell Dava, your next station stop. If you are alighting here, please ensure you have all your belongings with you when you leave the train. Do take all of your belongings, but do not take any of the belongings which do not belong to you. To clarify, all belongings belonging to you are belongings you should not be leaving on the train upon your leaving of the train. But all belongings belonging to others should be left on the train when you leave the train, as these belongings still belong on the train. Or simply put, when you are no longer on the train, your belongings cease to be belongings that belong on the train. The only belongings that belong on the train are those belongings which belong to those on the train. And of course, those belongings which belong to the train. Such as the seats and the little hammer for smashing windows. These belongings, whilst not belonging to those on the train, are the belongings of the train, and therefore belong on the train. Mitchell Dever, your next station stop, take your crap with you.
Yeah, OK, can I have everyone's attention for a moment? Thank you. Right, look, it's about the 3D printer.
Oh.
Now, listen, the 3D bioprinter represents a revolutionary tool in medical science, OK? We can already print prosthetic limbs. We're not far from actually being able to print replacement organs. It's a game-changer. It's also, as you might imagine, incredibly expensive to use. So can you all please stop using it to print out bums?
It's just a bit of fun, Bob.
It's wasteful. Do you know how much bio-ink goes into a bum? Nearly a whole cartridge. And it's not fun anyway, it's creepy. The office is covered in bums.
Yeah! Cheer it up!
But one bum might cheer it up, maybe. But the corridor to the break room now, it's completely lined with bums. Stop it, all right?
Oh, come on, boss. It's got to be some purpose.
No, I'm putting my foot down. No more bum printing, unless it's for legitimate medical reasons, of which, incidentally, I can think of none. Got it?
Yes, boss.
Thanks.
Boss?
Yeah?
Does that go for boobs, too?
No, boobs are fine.
Famous Anecdotes, the way they really happened. Dorothy Parker.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. I'm sorry to have to interrupt your party, but I thought you'd want to know. President Calvin Coolidge is dead.
How could they tell?
Well, I mean, he had a massive heart attack.
Yeah, but...
I mean, he's a former president. I'm guessing he's got some pretty good doctors. They're not going to make a mistake.
Yeah, but listen, Coolidge, he was famously very quiet, wasn't he? You know, a kind of stiff kind of guy. So how could they tell? It was a joke.
Oh. Okay.
Forget it.
Jesus, Dorothy, a man just died.
I said forget it!
This is for salmon. T is for trout. U is for... come back to you. V is... Oh, it's no good. I'm awake. I'm wide awake. Bloody hell. What time is it anyway? Oh, God, I've hardly been asleep at all. Maybe Ursula's still awake. She's quite still, but maybe she's just lying there, unable to sleep, wishing I was awake so we could talk. It's probably just worth really quietly checking. Ursula, are you awake? Are you awake? Ursula?
No.
Okay.
Well, I am now.
Oh, sorry, did I wake you?
Yes. What time is it, anyway?
5:30 November.
November? You woke me up in November. You're so selfish, Bruno. Some of us have got cubs to give birth to in March.
Oh, sorry, I thought you might not be asleep.
Well, I was. How long have you been awake?
About a week.
A week? For God's sake, Bruno, remember last year? I was awake all January and I didn't wake you up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just go back to sleep.
I'm going to. Good night.
All right, fine. U is for underwater fish. V is for very underwater fish. No, it's useless. Try something else. Feeling my paws getting heavy. And that heaviness spreading up through my fur and into my hindquarters. Feeling that warm, sleepy glow spreading over me like honey. Oh, I could just eat some honey. No, go to sleep. But maybe I'm hungry. Maybe that's why I can't sleep. Maybe if I just got up, quickly had some honey, I'll come back all full and tired and ready to sleep. Yeah. So I just need to ease out the cave.
Wakey. What are you doing?
Oh, are you awake?
No, what are you doing?
I can't sleep.
Well, whose fault is that? Of course you can't sleep. You didn't get up till May.
So I thought I might just really quickly get up, maybe find a bee's nest.
No, you'll wake me up again when you come back.
You could come with me.
I've put on 300 pounds of fat to get through the winter. I'm not parading around the forest in it. Go to sleep.
Yeah, just go to sleep. I have never been more awake in my whole life. Oh, so maybe I could just push on through. I mean, I absolutely have to be gathering food for the new cubs in March, but then I could have a nap in April and I'd be really properly tired for next hibernation. Oh, or I could start gathering food now while I'm feeling so awake, get it all gathered, and then have a lie-in for the whole spring. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll get up now and gather all the cubs together. And then we'll... No, cubs aren't here. I'll get the food, I'll find the cubs, and then just... Then.
Oh, fine, I can't sleep either now. Let's get some honey. Oh, you're kidding!
Then we are agreed. King James, the heretic, their hated Protestant aristocracy and all the rotten machinery of Parliament are to be exploded by our hand this All Hallows Day.
Aye!
And rejoice, my friends, for mistake not that the names of Guy Fawkes and his trusty crew will live long down the valley of the years, and men, women and children of England will forever remember the 1st of November.
Oh, is that the Monday?
Yes.
Yeah, Monday's a bit tricky for me.
Tricky? How so tricky?
Well, my brother-in-law's moving house, and I promised I'd help.
Well, I venture the removal of King James takes precedence over the removal of your brother-in-law.
Yes, very good. No, but seriously, he helped us when we moved, so it looked really bad.
But we're ridding the land of our Protestant oppressors.
Right, well, yes, I mean, do we have to do it on that day? I mean, you know, the Protestant oppressors, I mean, they're there every day. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Very well. We'll do it on the 2nd.
No, cheers, Guy.
2nd's not great for me, actually.
Why not?
I've got a thing.
Is it golf? Are you asking me to postpone the dawn of a second age of Catholic enlightenment for you to play golf?
It's no use snapping, Guido. You know very well I told you when I joined this conspiracy I couldn't do any Tuesday. There was a tournament match.
Fine, the 3rd.
No.
Why not?
I'm taking Sarah on a mini break.
A mini break?
Well, she's been giving me a hard time because I'm always out conspiring with you guys. I promise I won't.
Is it on the wall planner?
No, it's not.
Guys, this is exactly why I put the wall planner up in our conspiratorial lair. I can't plan around people's holidays if I don't know about them. When do you get back?
4th.
All right, the 4th then.
Great.
Good for me.
Yep.
What have you got on the 4th?
Nothing, but it's my birthday.
Well, so?
So, I don't want to be crawling around in a dungeon on my birthday.
But you will be liberating your country and your church. What better way to celebrate?
Oh, yeah, especially if we get caught. Hung, drawn and quartered on my birthday. Very celebratory.
Nah, you never do anything for your birthday anyway, Catesby.
Maybe not. But there's a difference between choosing to celebrate quietly at home and being forced to assassinate a monarch and legislative assembly. It's just not very birthday-ish.
Very well, the 5th.
No, but you know that's my fishing trip, don't you? I mean, that's been on the war planner since May.
Yes, but we don't meet until 9.
Oh, well, so long as it's an evening thing.
Yes, I can safely say blowing up the Houses of Parliament will be an evening thing.
Well, that's great, then.
Yeah, that's actually better for me.
Good. We are decided, then. King James's fate is sealed. He dies on the 4th of November.
Didn't we just say the 5th?
Oh, damn, we're going to have to come up with a way of remembering that.
Anything to declare, sir?
I have nothing to declare, but my genius.
Okay, will you come along with me, sir?
Oh, is that really necessary? You fellows go ahead. I'll be with you in a few minutes.
No, sir, you're going to be a lot longer than that. Oh.
Well, since you ask me for a tale of mean streets and hard-boiled dames, there is one curious tale you may find of interest. It all began one rainy Chicago night in black and white. During the period that I was, for tax reasons, an American. I was in my office, a downtown dive on the Upper East North-South side, above an abattoir and below another abattoir. It wasn't much, but it was the best I could afford. Business was slower than a Buick with an elephant in its trunk. Or indeed an elephant with a Buick in its trunk. I was conducting a little business meeting with the only partner I'd ever need, Jack Daniels, when there was a knock at the door. I swept Jack back into my desk drawer. In came the kind of dame I thought they couldn't get the material to make anymore. She had legs that went from her waist all the way to her knees. And didn't stop there. She had hair that covered her head like a big, hairy hat. But not in a good way. And she had a figure that naturally, as a gentleman, I wouldn't dream of noticing. I was taking a while to get used to being an American.
Are you Finnamore, P.I.?
She purred in a voice like honey being poured over Marilyn Monroe. Well, if I'm not, then that's some mighty neat graffiti on my window.
Oh, and are you a limey jackass?
What? Oh, no, that actually is. Oh. Oh, it's not even that neat. Oh. The dame lit a cigarette. I didn't really want one, but it was a kind gesture, so I took it. Thanks.
I was told you're some kind of a detective.
Well, that all depends, sister.
Yeah? On what?
No, you're quite right. It doesn't really depend. I am a detective. She lit another cigarette. I barely started the first one, but one never refuses a lady. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I've got a job for you.
What is it?
You ask a lot of questions, don't you?
Well, to be fair, that question seems like kind of the bare minimum.
Ah, just knock it off, will ya? Thanks.
Also, it actually was a big hairy hat.
Now listen up. You go to the corner of 42nd Street and Route 66. There's a bar there called MacGuffin's. Ring 16 times. For long, for short, for medium length, and for freestyle. And ask the guy who answers about the alabaster tortoise. Oh, and one more thing.
But at that moment, the window behind me shattered, which was annoying, but at least meant I wouldn't have to clean the graffiti off it. And something thumped under the rug. It was a gun. Tied to it was a note, which read, "Lay off, Finnamore, or next time it'll be the bullets." Just then there was a tap at what remained at the window.
Good evening. I wonder if I could trouble you for my gun back.
The speaker was a funny-looking foreigner with a strange accent, which is rich coming from me. Did you throw that? I asked him.
Certainly. It is possible I may not have fully thought through my scheme. To be frank with you, Mr. Finnamore, even as the gun left my hand, I thought to myself, oh, hang on, though. But by then it was too late.
What's the big idea anyway? Is this some kind of a threat?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Yes, no, 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 a bit no, no. Let us just call it advice from a friend.
Listen, buddy. The only friend I need lives in a bottle in the top drawer of my desk.
Really?
You better believe it.
Can I see?
Why not?
Oh, I see. You are saying whiskey is your friend.
What? Oh, no. Wrong bottle.
Oh, leave me alone. I was sleeping. Who the hell are you? I'll take play your part, you punk.
My, my.
Yeah, this is my partner, Jack Daniels. No relation.
It's a big old window. I'll skin you alive, you big lummox.
Warning or not, that night I set out to earn my fee. I must have walked the length of Route 66 a dozen times, but there was no sign of a bar called MacGuffin's. Then it hit me. It was all a setup. I'd been played like a $2 banjo, and I did not like the noise I made. I hailed a cab. Take me to the Upper East North South Side, and there's $5 in it for you if you don't turn out to be the foreign guy with a chloroform bottle.
Oh, that's a pity. I could have used $5.
When I woke, I was tied to a chair in my own office, with the three of them watching me. The foreigner, the dame, and a guy I'd never seen before who looked like he bought his suits by the acre.
I do apologize for this incivility, Mr. Finnemore.
He purred.
But you see, we really couldn't have you sniffing around MacGuffin's any longer.
Right, but wasn't it the dame who sent me to MacGuffin's in the first place?
You bet I did, sweet cheeks, and you swallowed it whole.
Okay, and then you warned me off going.
Yes, but we knew that would make you only more determined to go.
But I thought you just said you didn't want me sniffing around there.
Mr. Finnemore, you disappoint me. I thought you'd have realized by now. MacGuffin's never existed.
Then what's the problem with me sniffing around there?
Well, hang on. Okay, you've confused me. Let's start again. So the dame told you to go to the bar.
But I was working for you.
Yes, I know. So wait a minute. Have any of us actually committed a crime?
Not me, boss.
I thought you were doing it.
Oh, for goodness gracious, I keep telling you, we do the crime first and the cover-up after. It just doesn't work this way around.
Sorry, boss.
Oh, we could kill him, though.
Oh, yes, great, we'll kill him and hide the body at MacGuffin's.
No, boss, remember, MacGuffin's doesn't really...
Oh, look, can't you just stop thinking about it so hard and just enjoy it? Okay, Finnemore, time to say your prayers.
I had to think fast. My mind raced like a Buick with no elephants in it at all. Well, I guess we all have to go sometime. But can't the condemned man at least have a final drink?
Very well. Have you got any?
Try the top drawer of my desk. And can you take it out without really looking at it?
That seems a reasonable request.
Can you unscrew it for me? I'm a little tied up here. Keep not looking at it.
Of course.
Thanks. You're a pal. Oh, and one last thing, mister.
Yes?
Say hello to my little friend.
Yeah! Ah, get off my face! Boys! Oh, he's putting my
good
eyes
night.
Out.
John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme is written by and starred John Finnemore, with Margaret K. Bond-Smith, Simon Caine, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish. And if you're listening to this as the radio waves from Earth finally reach a distant galaxy, then greetings, aliens. We come in peace. Except Margaret.